Hello everyone and welcome to this podcast on exercise and sport in pediatric diabetes. My name is Diyar Imadi and I will be your host for today. I am again excited to have Adam Majula back for our last episode to discuss this particular topic in pediatric diabetes. Just to remind you all, Adam Majula is a credentialed diabetes educator with over 18 years of experience working at Monash Children's Hospital in Melbourne. During this time, Adam has developed a special interest in type 1 diabetes, technology, and pediatric education and management. Adam, thanks again for joining us. Hopefully you are feeling good and ready to record this last episode. I know we've asked a lot of you lately.
Well, thanks, Dave. Thanks for having me for the last podcast. That's been good, and hopefully, the listeners will be able to take something away hopefully from this podcast and the other podcasts that have been completed.
Yep. Now, today we'll be talking about sports and exercise in pediatric diabetes management. Now, as we know, children are often very active, at the home and in school and just in general life. So given this level of activity, is sport encouraged at this particular age? Would we recommend for children to be physically active on top of their existing level of activity?
Thanks, Ed. Yeah, look, absolutely. I think, one of the things that we really make a point of when any child is diagnosed with type 1 is that we don't want them, we want them to continue to live their normal life. Nothing should really change from an external perspective in terms of what they're doing. And, as I've sort of touched on previously, from a schooling perspective, we want, clearly all of that to continue. We want, their sporting, activity to obviously continue. And, no matter the age, we want children to obviously be active, and we want them playing, sports and activities and doing what they want to do. And type 1 diabetes should not hold them back at all. There are no exercises specifically for people with type 1. Any activity or exercise is clearly possible. There are clearly going to be high and low glucose levels with activity and sports. But, obviously what we try and do is figure out what works best for the child and ensuring that they're able to sort of complete or, participate in that activity to their best ability and to their enjoyment, and that the diabetes is not impacting on that. We know that obviously physical activity for all people living with type 1, is associated with many health benefits, from a cardiovascular perspective, bone health and psychological perspective, but also obviously, a glycemic perspective also. And that is no different in the pediatric environment. National guidelines encourage all children to participate in 60 minutes of activity per day, and obviously limiting, screen time to less than 2 hours per day. And as we know, there are many elite athletes, both male and female, who live with type 1 diabetes, who have participated in elite sport, being professional sport, Olympics, etc., with type 1 diabetes. So it shouldn't be something that obviously stops the kids from participating in a particular sport or activity, but just ensuring that they have an understanding around how to manage the sport to the best of their ability.
Now, can you talk to us about the impact of different types of activities and different types of sports on blood glucose levels in terms of rising and falling? Do different activities have different impacts on blood glucose levels?
Yes. It's a good question. I think with all different activity, and we particularly see this in children, but I think obviously, as I sort of touched on, most kids play, we sort of find most kids do play a sport of some sort. I probably personally find activity and exercise to be one of the most challenging areas to manage at times, but more because there's no real blanket approach. I think, we manage things like hypoglycemia really similar in some way, in that whether it's age or weight-based treatment, and it's a fairly blanket sort of approach. Whereas exercise, we give really basic sort of guidelines around what to do, but then the impact of what that exercise or sport does can really vary differently. And that's what makes it obviously a really challenging sort of area. what we sort of do clearly see, you know, is that obviously activity and exercise affects everyone a little differently. And, you know, every young child or person is different in the way their body responds to activity or exercise. You know, so, you know, we sort of generally find with things like aerobic exercise, like running or bike riding or swimming, you know, the activity will usually lower the glucose levels, you know, and that can be obviously initially, but also there can, you know, sometimes can have a bit of a delayed effect of that activity on their glucose levels, which can be common after, you know, any strenuous or endurance activity, even for anywhere from up to 24 hours afterwards. So, and as we sort of know, you know, this connectedness occurs as the child's body replaces the glucose stores in the muscles and the body becomes more sensitive to insulin uptake during or after exercise. So, you know, so additional, you know, monitoring around that is obviously what we sort of do have to do, and additional sort of needs obviously met, which we can talk a little bit about later. You know, things like anaerobic exercise, you know, weight training or, you know, some contact sport can sometimes obviously elevate blood glucose levels, you know, due to the stress hormones such as adrenaline or cortisol, which are obviously increased during these types of activities, which can sometimes increase the glucose levels. So it can be really conflicting and really confusing at times, and it's something that we quite often get feedback from. You know, my child's blood sugars are rising and you guys said that they would generally drop or vice versa. And so I think initially around that, obviously a lot of what we do is give some basic structure of education around what we feel activity will do to glucose levels and the types of activity that we sort of do feel will affect the glucose levels in a certain way. Clearly do not hold the child back from doing that activity. But obviously, and again, probably with the role of technology we've got now to be able to understand activity and exercise more effectively has been really valuable, and having a more intimate understanding of what, you know, what glucose levels do when we do exercise, you know, are they rising, are they falling? So I think that's where technology has been really valuable, to be able to look at how blood glucose levels rise or fall with exercise, and then how we manage that more effectively, you know, in terms of insulin or food, etc., and tailor their management for each particular child.
Now, moving on to risk of hyperglycemia and exercise. When is the risk at its peak, and also how long is the client at risk after exercise? We know that exercise can have an impact many hours after in terms of blood glucose levels. And is this kind of risk the same for adult population as and pediatric population?
Yes, it's a good question. I think, as we know, the risk of hypoglycemia is always increased with added exercise. And the tricky part about exercise in children of all ages is that it's often unplanned and spontaneous. A child might come home from school and do their homework and then go for a bike ride with their friends, or go outside and play basketball for an hour, or bounce a trampoline for 45 minutes. You know, and we know that obviously a lot of that activity can impact on glucose levels and impact on the response, particularly on whatever particular activity they're obviously doing. So, you know, and that's what makes it really tricky. We just don't know if, you know, the child's going to run around for 15 minutes or go and sit on the couch and watch TV for an hour. So, you know, that the response and the timing of the exercise will obviously vary quite differently, and obviously will be the risk of hypoglycemia associated with that will obviously increase depending on the time of day and, you know, the food intake and whether the insulin is peaking around that particular point in time. We clearly know that glucose absorption is increased during exercise and that uptake, you know, is happening during exercise, and the role of carbohydrate absorption slowing down during exercise, which obviously increases the risk of, you know, hypoglycemia during exercise in particular. So we probably find particularly that the risk is probably at its highest during the exercise quite often, particularly when the exercise initially commences and the child is exercising or playing in their sport or activity. A lot of that can be based on, you know, the insulin peaking around that particular point in time and or the carbohydrate intake that they're having around that particular point in time as well. So that's the initial risk we talk about. And then obviously subsequently, as you sort of touched on, the role of a delayed hypoglycemia you know, what that obviously looks like, and making sure that the families are mindful that blood glucose levels can drop after exercise as well. So, you know, not to be, you know, treating particularly sort of, you know, the role of a glucose level rising sometimes after exercise and then dropping, you know, not treating that with insulin, you know, being mindful that obviously blood glucose levels can rise and fall, and being mindful and having that understanding of what that obviously looks like. And the risk can be really similar in the adult population also. You know, and I think it's probably more, you know, at times the spontaneous activity, which can be a little bit different. But yeah, I think that's the biggest thing we're probably really trying to focus in on, is understanding that, you know, glucose levels, particularly the risk of hypos, can be, you know, during the activity, can be after the activity, and can have that sort of delayed effect. So having the understanding around what you do then to be able to manage that is the most important.
Now, with all that in mind, I guess in your consults, what sort of advice would you give clients and families when it comes to exercise and diabetes, especially in the pediatric setting? Like, is there a limit as to how much exercise they can or should do per day or something like that?
You know, the best advice that we can sort of give around any exercise or activity, I feel, is, you know, is preparation and planning around that, and having an understanding around what, you know, what the activity does to individuals' glucose levels. I never like to put a limit on exercise for anyone. I think that, you know, I know that most kids are playing 1, 2, 3 sports sometimes, and you know, every single day they're active after school, they're active at school, you know, so I don't know how much more active they can obviously possibly be sometimes. So, you know, I don't think there's really a limit as to what that can ever look like. You know, sometimes there's definitely times where blood glucose levels are difficult to control, and probably activity can play a role with that. But it's something I don't think it's, you know, I've never said to a family or child, your child should be not exercising, or please exercise less, or make them watch TV more so we can help the glucose levels. I think, you know, we always want to encourage as much activity as possible. But in terms of managing that, I think that, you know, initially, as I sort of touched on, you know, looking at what they need to do. So obviously, you know, having an understanding of what the monitoring looks like, so increased glucose monitoring, and understanding if they're wearing continuous glucose monitoring, what that looks like. So, you know, so we would obviously generally get the kids to be having checking their glucose level or sensor glucose level pre-exercise. Then obviously during their exercise, whether they're doing a finger prick or whether they're looking at their continuous glucose monitor during their exercise, and then obviously after their exercise as well. So, and then taking consideration, you know, 1 or 2 hours after exercise, as well as that delayed effect of exercise. So ensuring to have an understanding of what their glucose levels do initially, you know, seeing if there's a pattern that is being displayed with each particular exercise that's obviously occurring. If they're showing that the pattern is that their blood sugar levels are dropping with exercise, so if the child's blood sugar levels are dropping with each exercise each time that they're playing a particular sport, clearly the things we would then look to do is lowering their insulin doses as one of the first sort of things. So it's not uncommon for kids to have a lower dose of insulin, say on a Saturday morning when they're playing netball or football or something after breakfast or pre-lunch, so having a lower dose of insulin. And obviously then the role of carbohydrate intake with that as well. So depending on the glucose level, and look, every facility or individual might do this slightly differently. I mean, we sort of use a table or a structure based on what the glucose level is prior to exercise. You know, if the glucose level is in target, we would potentially obviously look to have additional carbohydrates to be consumed prior to the exercise. If the glucose level is elevated, we might not have an issue or any additional carbohydrates prior to the activity. So it'd be completely based on the glucose level, the type of exercise, the response of the exercise, you know, lowering the insulin dose around that, ensuring that they've got their hypo treatment there, they've got their insulin there if they require it for whatever reason, you know, they also look at, we also look at things like injection sites. So, you know, avoid, you know, sort of potentially might avoid injecting in sites such as the upper thighs or upper arms. So sometimes prior to sports, might have a quicker absorption during exercise. But again, there's no limit on a lot of this. We just want to ensure that, you know, each sport that they do, they have a plan around that. So they sort of know, and I find that's probably what works best, that, you know, we might just literally just write it out and say, okay, pre-basketball, we're going to check your blood sugar. If it's between this range, we're going to have this amount of carbohydrate. This is the dose you're going to be having on this particular day. We might find this particular sport has a, might have a delayed effect on their glucose level 2 or 3 hours after, so we may have to reduce the dose a little bit later on. So that's probably how we would try and tailor and structure each exercise and management around each particular child, particularly.
Yeah. Now, what about maintaining energy levels during exercise? I often think of lollies or oranges being passed around at halftime at the football or soccer, or, you know, kids drinking Powerade and drinks like that that are often quite full of sugar. So what kind of snacks should young clients with diabetes have when they're physically active?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I think, you know, I think back to obviously, you know, playing a lot of sport myself, and yes, you know, you're constantly having to consume food and eat and having oranges and lollies passed around, and you know, watching my children, you know, do that right now is very similar. And I think that it's a tricky one. I think that clearly we're wanting kids to be kids and not wanting them to miss out. And obviously the role of particularly things like fruit is obviously really appropriate, and things that, you know, having some fruit at 3/4 time of football, for instance, or something is clearly going to be appropriate given that it's obviously particularly will support glucose levels, and it's not going to have a huge impact on elevating the glucose levels. But I think overall, it probably the role of food and the types of food and snacks will really depend on the type of activity that each child is doing, the role of whatever activity that is on their glucose levels, or the impact on that activity with their glucose levels, and then what they feel is the best way to manage their exercise with what they're consuming. I mean, we're not wanting the kids to be having a 3-course meal prior to every activity, because to hold their glucose levels up, you know, and obviously I think in those situations we're clearly missing the point, because we, you know, the role of reducing insulin is obviously really important. You know, we know insulin sensitivity increases during exercise, so therefore we know we clearly have to reduce insulin. So, you know, we don't want to be consuming huge amounts of food to be able to keep the glucose levels up. So, you know, we, you know, individually we would clearly use the, you know, the dietitians to do some support with the kids in terms of the types of foods that might be better suited to them. And generally there might be sort of low GI, you know, snacks, you know, to things like fruit or, you know, some sort of, you know, energy in little muesli bars that are sort of not too high in carbohydrates or sugar, that to be able to sort of support the glucose levels appropriately, clearly appropriate in those sort of situations as well. So, but I think a lot of the time it's just trying to find what best suits the individual, what best suits the child. You know, having a list of carbohydrates and a list of things that they can obviously have and what best suits them for their particular sport is obviously really important also. So, you know, you want to be able to give options and give different options of what obviously the kids can consume during their activity or exercise. I think, you know, I'm probably not a huge fan of sports drinks and things, particularly the younger age groups. I don't think that they're playing at an intense level that they really need now. I think we're able to manage glucose levels with insulin and appropriate low GI snacks to be able to sort of hold the glucose level for the duration of the exercise. You know, I think potentially as the kids get older and the impact of the more intense activity or exercise they might be doing, you know, sports drinks may play a role, but I would generally be probably, you know, liaising with, you know, the dietitians or the multidisciplinary team in terms of what that would look like and different options to be able to sort of utilize in those situations also.
Now, for our next question, we sort of touched on this in our first episode around technology, but obviously technology plays a big role when it comes to exercise and diabetes, both in the pediatric population and adults. Would the settings be different when it comes to technology being used in, while physically active compared to not?
Yes, I think the role of CGM and exercise, for instance, is being invaluable, I feel. So I think that with any previously, I probably think back now. I mean, we were obviously getting kids to prior to continuous glucose monitoring. We were getting kids to prick their finger pre-exercise and potentially doing one during their exercise and then post-exercise. And there's a lot of finger pricks. There was obviously still gaps between a bit of that data in terms of what was going on, but it was a bit of dot to dot. We sort of just joined the dots and going, okay, we think that's probably the impact of what's going on. Let's tailor the management around that a little bit. Whereas obviously now we're being able to get more understanding of what exercise and the impact of what that's now looking like for both children and adults. With the use of, say, continuous glucose monitoring and, being able to sort of sit with the child and family to interpret that data, I think is so valuable now and seeing the patterns and how that sort of forms. And I think that's the biggest thing. I mean, looking for patterns with exercise, not just sort of looking at one exercise and one instance and going, well, the blood sugar's dropped, let's just do that all the time now. I mean, I think we need to sort of look at, two or three or four weeks of that particular exercise, see what it actually does. Clearly, we take a basic approach initially, and this is what we generally feel would occur, and this is how we generally treat the exercise or management by lowering doses, increasing carb intake, etc. But then interpreting that data with the role of CGM is really valuable. To be able to look at that, and then you can also assess the role of the carb intake. Also, you might have a stable glucose level, and you might be consuming something pre-exercise, which is sending the blood sugar level up to 15 or 20. Clearly, that's probably the wrong thing to be having then. So looking at the impact of the carb and the impact of the insulin dose, are we increasing it or decreasing it? Are we decreasing it too much? So we've got more understanding. And then also the role of delayed effective exercise with continued glucose monitoring, what that looks like. So CGM has been amazing with exercise, I feel. And I think with exercise and pump therapy, I think we're still learning more about how to manage that, particularly now with hybrid closed loop therapy and the automated pumps and algorithms and how they function and best work with exercise. And the management around it, I think, is really different. We're probably almost tailoring it now to not be consuming any carbohydrates at times with exercise and relying more on the algorithm to be managing if they're continually wearing the pump. It's probably another podcast talking about hybrid closed loops and exercise in some way, but it's but I think, in a bit of a nutshell, I think with pumps we've got access to temporarily increasing or decreasing insulin by the use of the pumps and the modes that they have, whether they're in a hybrid closed loop or whether they're in a manual mode. We can increase or decrease targets or increase or decrease basal insulin to be able to best manage the glucose levels. And that definitely, I think, has helped and it will continue to help. But I still think it's an area that we probably are still learning about how best to manage as well, how best to manage, because we clearly know that we probably need less carbohydrate intake with, say, hybrid closed loop, what we would do with insulin injections. So learning more about what the best options are and what how we best manage them, I think it's going to be valuable as we progress.
Yeah. Now, you also touched on this earlier in this episode in terms of having professional athletes who live with type 1 diabetes. Now, when it comes to children, obviously there are many that are in sports academies and are working towards having a career and becoming professional athletes themselves. So how does their diabetes management differ from those who also live with type 1 diabetes but don't really plan on having a career around sports or wanting to be professional athletes?
Yeah, look, I think, to be honest, I don't think it really differs too much. I think where it probably differs, I think the initial grounding and those initial sort of building blocks around what how to best manage diabetes really doesn't change. I think that when you speak to individuals who are playing sport at a higher level or professionally with type 1, you know, more often than not, they've honed their plan or they've honed their preparation around their activity over years of repeated exposure to it, and they've made mistakes, and that's okay, and that's what we expect to occur, you know, because it can be, you know, really challenging initially to be able to have that initial understanding of the glycemic control and exercise. And so I think what then probably changes is the intensity of that and the amount of repeated sessions that the individual is probably exposed to, you know. So frequency and intensity are the two biggest factors that probably change, but the basic understanding around what happens initially is probably no different, and that's probably what I've personally found having spoken to and worked with kids who have played at a professional level. You know, they've been able to sort of have that understanding, put that into place, know what their management does and what their glucose levels do with the repeated exposure. And yes, it's going to be a bit more challenging at times. And yes, there's probably an element of more adjustments, particularly with insulin and carb intake, around the repeated nature of the increased sessions. But the overall factors, I don't feel really overly changed too much.
Thanks for that. Any last words of wisdom or advice for our listeners when it comes to this particular topic? Obviously, it's a very interesting one and one that all of our educators get asked on when it comes to exercise and diabetes management. So, you know, any tips that you can give us all will be much appreciated, I suppose.
Yeah, look, I think probably what I keep touching on. I mean, a lot of these areas, you know, I think we've sort of, you know, the podcasts I've been involved with, you know, we've looked at technology and we've looked at schools. I mean, they're all changing areas and developing areas. But I think with probably exercise is probably an area that it isn't a one size fits all. It is a challenging area, but it is a very individualized area, I feel. You know, so making sure, I think that the best advice I can probably give is ensuring that each, particularly in type 1 and in children particularly, you know, making sure that each child has their own plan and own structure around what they sort of do. It's not just a blanket approach. It's that, oh, yeah, well, I'm exercising, I'm just going to have, you know, I'm going to have 15 grams of carbs regardless of what my blood glucose levels do. And that's quite often what we see, because that's what they're told to do, that exercise lowers blood sugar levels, and that's what we do.
Yeah.
I mean, I think we've got the role, we've got technology now to look at what happens and the impact of technology with assessing blood sugar levels. And, you know, I think that that's something that, you know, we try and, you know, I feel the best advice I can give is to look at that and have that understanding around what occurs, and to support the client with in terms of how best to manage that response. I mean, the response might not vary too much, and perfect, we keep doing what we obviously do. You know, if blood glucose levels are dropping really excessively during exercise, you know, looking at insulin and obviously carb intake. I'm not a huge fan of having huge amounts of carb pre-exercise. I think that, you know, sometimes I think we're missing the answer there if we're having to have masses of carbohydrates to be able to hold glucose levels up during exercise or activity. So the role of obviously insulin adjustment and, you know, injection sites and timing of insulin in terms of when the insulin is peaking, the activity that's happening, you know, is the insulin peaking at the same time, and what all that sort of looks like. And there is a bit of science there, and there is a bit of trial and error, and there's a lot of mistakes that are going to be made along the way, and there's going to be hypos. And I think that's in a professional manner what we need to be portraying to our families and kids and anyone with type 1, is that, you know, you are going to make mistakes along the way, you know, regardless of whatever you're doing with your management. But, you know, I think we, particularly in exercise, we try and learn from a lot of the, you know, the things that we sort of do and how we sort of best manage the particularly the exercise and sport. And, you know, if we have, you know, if we eat too much or we have too, you know, too much insulin or not enough insulin, you know, we just keep trying to persist and get it right. And at times we might not feel we're probably getting it right, and we might get it right every single time. And I think when, you know, you speak to most people with type 1 and they exercise, it's never perfect. The blood sugars aren't just going to sit between 5 and 6 the whole time they're exercising. Quite often, they still might do the same thing day in, day out for their exercise. There still will be variances there, and that's okay. And that's going to occur. But I think as long as if you can, you know, at times or the majority of the time, being able to get from A to B in a safe, appropriate manner, you know, I think it's probably going to be the best way to manage, you know, lungs fat in particular.
Indeed, yeah. Well, I suppose, as you said, it's individualized, especially with exercise, to the exercise and to the individual. So, yes, that's really good advice. Adam, it's been a pleasure, not just for today, but also for the entire series. I know we've asked a lot of you, and it's been great to tap into your experience and just to get a bit of insight into the pediatric diabetes management space. So, once again, thank you so much, and I'm sure all of our listeners appreciate the time that you've given us. So thank you so much, and hopefully we can again in the future ask you for some more advice. Yeah, thanks again so much for your time.
Thanks, Ed, and thanks again for having me. Thanks to the ADA for asking me to be involved in the podcast. I think they're really valuable sources of information, education. You know, I've tried to make it as broad and give as much advice as I possibly can. Like I said, a lot of it is a changing area and a changing landscape in a lot of the podcasts we've sort of spoken about today. But hopefully being able to get something out of it. But thank you again.
Most welcome. Now, to all of our listeners, again, thank you so much for listening to this podcast. And hopefully you enjoyed the series and are able to get some information out of it to apply to your normal practice. So again, to get your CBD points, please complete the feedback and evaluation, and you'll be able to download your certificate. Until next time, thank you so much, and goodbye.